Welcome back to another episode of Seven Deadly Sinners. This is Rachel O'Brien and Craig Hunter.
Live from Aguilar.
Yes. You keep saying where we live.
Come get us.
I mean, if the fires don't get us, this is a good segue, though. If the fires don't get us, then
maybe
we have a fire story for you.
There we go. Today.
I got inspired to write this because, well, A, we're going to be going to our annual Maupin, Oregon rafting trip with my, like, high school best friends. And
a tradition like none other.
It is a blast, except for I'm not allowed to raft because I punctured an eardrum, and B, I broke my back a couple years ago.
We're going to put her in one of those like hamster balls and let her float down the river that way.
You know, I'm just not going to raft. I think it's just not the right time.
Yeah, you know, you're sitting this year out.
Yeah, but I thought of this because, A, we're surrounded by fires right now. I almost had a panic attack just a couple days ago because there was a fire coming over our ridge. And I confirmed that with a gentleman named Kirk. I'll just say his first name. He's from the fire department. And he said, had someone not alerted the fire department, it was very close to us.
All right.
So there we go. But in terms of Oregon, which is where this story takes place, I drove. So after my car accident, my parents, I had to fly to, Greg was in LA filming a movie, something, I don't know. And my parents needed to drive me to a dentist appointment. Because I'm 12, apparently. So I flew.
It was a dental operation. You had a surgical.
Yeah, it's true.
It wasn't, you know, they were putting you under. There was a reason you couldn't drive yourself.
Well, I also wasn't allowed to drive because I was in a back brace. And
yeah. Well, we're not going to let you drive anymore at all. Bubble.
It's all over for
you're
me.
You're about ready to be a bubble girl. Yeah.
It's all over for me.
After her latest escapade. Somersaulting down the San Gabriel Mountains.
You shouldn't have taken me on that trail.
She's a circus act.
Yeah, it could be.
Unkillable, wild, wonderful Woz.
There you go.
Yep.
That's me. Yes, I did somersault down a mountain. And if I'm speaking loudly, it's because I can't hear out of one ear right now.
Rachel's now half deaf, the half deaf podcaster.
But anyways, where was I going with the... Oh.
Point is, so she's basically hearing in mono now.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. But the reason why I brought up the Oregon fire part, and this is going to be an Oregon fire story, is when my parents drove me back to Colorado, we drove through, I think it was 400,000 acres of just... Fire. I mean, it was so shocking to me to see. It was shocking to my parents too, because they had not driven, because they live in southern Oregon now, and to get back to Colorado, you have to drive through, like, and then you go through Idaho and blah blah blah. It was massive, 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 massive. Like, it just kept going, and it reminds me of the fires that are around us right now. I think we're probably up to 100,000 acres.
Well, the Aspen Acres fire is, yesterday it was at 91,000 acres.
Yeah, let's see where it's at now.
In the whole state, we're well over 100,000.
Yeah, I mean, the...
Because Colorado was burning.
The Aspen Acres fire is the biggest fire in the entire country right now. And there's a lot of fires going on in the country. But that one, and it's massive. We've seen it. And Greg's actually going to go fix his phone today in Pueblo and go past it. But it's massive.
It's devastating. It's horrifying.
And our hearts go out to the people that have lost their homes. I mean, Buela, how do you say that?
Yeah, Buela.
Buela, that's gone. so many houses in Rye, Colorado City. I mean, they're...
And we have, you know, friends up that way. Not sure if, you know, they've lost property at this point. Not really the right time to reach out some of our acquaintances up there, but it's heartbreaking. I mean, and it just, it's weird because, like, growing up, I never remember wildfires being like this, like, annual thing. But it seems like every year, you know.
I don't remember. We've lived in, so we moved here February 2022. So let's go with close to 4 years, what, or past 4 years, whatever. I don't remember fires here. I remember flood things, but not
just here, like California. Last year it was the Palisades fires.
Oh, well, yeah, that was horrible.
I mean, before that,
the Palisades fire, I still can't, when we go back to LA, because I worked in the Palisades on a daily basis. You did too. I mean, you worked for Steve.
Yeah, I worked for a film composer. We made multiple films together, and we did a lot of the work at his studio in the Palisades, which is all gone.
Yeah, he lost two homes. Every single person I worked for before I made it in podcasting and comedy or whatever, Sheila, the grandmother, and Susan, both their houses gone. Ben Leeds, their brother or whatever, gone. Just, but I can't bring myself to even... When we visit, I don't think I could see it.
It's wild. I mean, you know, definitely a different scenario than like a forest fire where there's not as many structures burned. I mean, speaking of structures lost, like I think the Palisades fire has to be like the worst since maybe the Chicago fire. But my point was that like growing up, I don't remember there ever being a forest fire threat, but in the last 10 years, like 2016, I remember the Malibu fires. I was in LA. I was filming a movie, and it was just like, the sky is scorched, which actually worked well for this post-apocalyptic movie we were filming. And like we got drone footage of downtown LA, and you know, it was like, you know, that was the first time I remember like, wow, this is crazy. Look at what it's doing to the sky and the sun looks like we're on a different planet. And then boom, 2018, there was the spring fire here. We weren't together, but on my property in Colorado, it was burning all around us. I mean, in La Vida, like, you know, up where Daniel Kick, his house is and over there, like all those trees are burnt because of that fire in 2018. And then there was another one in LA in 2019, and then the Palisades fires. Now this one, it just seems like I can like recall from memory like big fires that like I'm, you know, a few less than 100 miles away from, and they're destroying homes and structures and we can't stop it. And it's just kind of crazy that it's a new, I don't know, I'm not like a big global warming. I guess what I'm saying is I'm not looking for fires, but it seems like there are memorable, massive, threatening fires every year or every other year that are impacting my life. And I think that that's kind of an obvious change from the past. And I'm not some big global warming activist, but there's got to be something going on.
I agree.
And maybe it's, excuse me, bad forestry tactics. Maybe it's underfunding of that. Maybe it's human interference and there is some sort of conspiracy going on where there's bad people lighting the fires. Or maybe it's all natural and we're heating up and we're having crazier winds and more lightning. I don't know, but there's clearly a trend that's, I think, really hard to ignore.
Yeah. I believe that one of the fires here was started by a person, but in the story I'm going to tell you, some of it does have to do with forest mitigation. And sorry, I was getting a call.
Popular girl.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, let's get to I do story. Think it's strange, before we get into this, that there seemingly has been a lot of forestry budget cuts.
Well, I do know from my dad owning a logging company for decades or whatever.
He's got great perspective.
That them saying like, oh, you shouldn't, you need to basically, it's tree farming, essentially. Like, you need to get rid of some of the stuff to
clear it out. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, well, let's just get to the story.
All right.
Apologize for the sneeze and then the call.
Hey, this is almost live.
There we go. All right. Let's get into it. Seven Deadly Sinners. Because you hit on a lot of things that this story will cover. So, let me tell you about it. So, there are some stories where you can point to a single match. Maybe one careless decision. Right now, it's a $1,000 fine if someone smokes outside. If you run a chainsaw outside right now in Colorado. $1,000 fine. Because the chainsaw will spark. Yeah. So, one careless decision, one spark, one person. But every so often, history hands us a tragedy that refuses to be so simple. This is one of those stories. Now, I don't believe that this is the one that I drove past in Oregon because the timeline doesn't add up, because that would have been 2023 and this happened in 2021. A wildfire erupted in the forests of southern Oregon that would grow so immense, so powerful, and so unpredictable that seasoned firefighters, people who had spent decades battling some of the worst infernos in the American West, admitted that they had never seen anything like it. That's kind of what's happening here. Wildfire tornadoes. Very scary. Go ahead.
I knew you were gonna you had mentioned something to me about wildfire tornadoes earlier when the Colorado fire started.
It sounds like the most terrifying thing I could even think of.
Exactly. I knew you were going to podcast about it.
Perfect. Well, I did. So this wasn't just merely a wildfire. It became its own ecosystem. And that's what I've been fascinated by with the fires around us. I'm like, it's creating its own weather system. Like, it's
true. All of the smoke in the air, you know, creates ash in the water droplets and heavier clouds, cumulonimbus clouds now full of ash. And yeah, all that heat is heating the air up. It does. It creates its own weather system.
It's exactly right.
I'm no meteorologist, but.
Well, neither am I, but I'd like to fancy myself a Helen Hunt of sorts. But it can generate winds. It creates thunderstorms, which it has done here, but this is in Oregon. It hurled embers miles ahead of its flames. At its peak, it burned with such intensity that weather satellites watched it manufacture towering clouds reaching tens of thousands of feet into the atmosphere. So imagine standing beneath a blue July sky. The air is hot, but that's nothing unusual for Southern Oregon. Then the horizon begins to darken, not with rain clouds, but with smoke so thick it blots out the afternoon sun. Ash begins to fall, not flakes, chunks. Almost reminds me of Mount St. Helens when that erupted.
Yeah, sounds like an eruption.
I wasn't alive for that, but my parents were. And it literally blanketed. I mean, they were in Astoria, Oregon, so far away from Mount St. Helens. I would say, what, like maybe 4 hours, 5 hours away? I don't know. It blocked out. It completely blocked out the sky, the sun. You could taste the ash, they said.
Ugh.
Oh, it was bad. I mean, it was. Anyways, so not flakes, chunks. Pieces of bark drift from the sky like black snow. The wind changes direction without warning. Trees explode before the fire even reaches them.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Because it's so hot.
Yeah. And they just combust.
Yeah.
And the idea of black snow, too, it's like... This could be like a good backdrop for a horror film.
It sounds like a horror film.
Tornado Inferno.
Yeah.
Fire Tornado.
It's terrifying. So, and somewhere overhead, lightning flashes not from Mother Nature, but from the fire itself. So it can literally create lightning. Because this fire had become something else entirely. This is the story of the Bootleg Fire. Not to be confused with Bootleg Prohibition.
But it's a little parallel jump from our last episode.
Yeah, a little bit. So this was a forest waiting to burn. Long before anyone heard of the name Bootleg Fire, the forests of Southern Oregon had been quietly changing. If you've never driven through this part of the country, it's difficult to appreciate just how vast it is. The landscape seems endless. It looks very similar to where we live. High desert.
Yeah, but it's got these like rolling hills that makes you kind of able to see even further. Because we get blocked by giant mountains. Like I remember when we first pulled in, the first time I was ever in the state of Oregon on our way to Maupin.
Because you drive through that area to get to Maupin.
Exactly. I remember we pulled off on some kind of like rest stop scenic viewpoint. Mm-hmm. And we walked out with our baby boy Blue. And I just remember seeing, like, you know, feeling like, man, this is what Lewis and Clark rolled up on. Like, even today, mm-hmm. not only was it so vast, but it was undeveloped.
Yeah.
Right? It was just land for as long as you could imagine and see. And
that is what's crazy about Oregon in general. I would say parts of Colorado, just so much untapped land, but Oregon, it is, there's the Southern Oregon area where it's just, you know, high desert, remote looking or whatever. But then you get into the thickets of the Pacific Northwest where I grew up, where it's just trees and trees and trees and trees.
It's so thick. It's so dense. You can't even see 5 feet into it.
Yeah.
So a total change. And then the size of the trees. I mean, it's a special place. It's like you're in Jurassic Park.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, you know, I love Colorado, and it's so cool. But, like, there's always a little hint of some civilization in most parts. Obviously, going to the national parks, no. But that's one thing I very distinctly remember about Oregon. And I've been all over the world. I've been, all over the country. And I just remember, like, wow, like, this is, we're in the wilderness.
Yeah.
We are out here. And, it is crazy
how I grew up and where my dad logged. I mean, well, you drove through, like, you go down Highway 26. It's just, and then you hit the Goonies, like, Cannon Beach area or whatever with the big rock or whatever. It's
there's
just
so much cool stuff. Like, the Columbia River. It's like an ocean. You can't see the other side of it.
It is. And then, well, it's the worst bar crossing. We've covered that on the podcast before.
Yeah. And then, an impenetrable forest. I mean, that's something I've never seen. Yeah. And like, you know, there's some great places in Indiana, but the trees are just toothpicks.
They are toothpicks compared to...
Exactly. And the trees are just so thick. Like when I say impenetrable, like I'm not kidding. If someone walks 10 feet into that forest... They're gone. They're just, you can't see them anymore.
Yeah, you could disappear. You could easily disappear.
Which is why Bigfoot might be real.
Bigfoot is real. Don't talk about Sasquatch or Bigfoot without saying he's real and he's with us. And I've experienced him fairly recently. Whatever.
There was a supposed news story. Could be fake.
What?
Someone supposedly found a specimen. An already dead specimen, and they tested the DNA, and it was like 57% Neanderthal, and then...
I'm not sure.
It's probably fake. I mean, the guy who found it looked like some Alabama bozo.
I am the only one, and me and Austin are the only ones that have experienced Bigfoot recently. Whoop.
Okay. Whoop.
We heard it.
All right.
back to the story.
Okay. But yeah, it is impenetrable. The best way for me to describe when he said the size of the trees, they cut a wedge out of the tree to fall it. And there is a photo of my dad next to, like, head on head, in laying in the tree. They take a photo of it. It would have to be 12 feet in diameter, the tree.
Yeah, easy.
If my dad's, well, he'll claim he's 5'11", 6 foot. He's probably 5'10". But let's just say, like, that's how big the trees are. Like, anyways. All right, so back to the story. We keep digressing. So the landscape seems endless, which Greg can attest to. Ancient ponderosa pines stretch toward the horizon. Lodgepole pine forests blanket the mountains. Marshes, lava fields, sagebrush flats, volcanic ridges, and crystal clear lakes create an ecosystem unlike almost anywhere else in America. Have you ever seen Crater Lake? It's quite beautiful. This is the country surrounding the eastern slopes of the Cascade Range, home to the Fremont Wimmina National Forest. It's beautiful. It's rugged. And in the summer, it can be frighteningly dry. Very similar to what's happening here. For generations, wildfire was part of the natural rhythm here. Lightning would ignite small fires. Those fires would creep along the forest floor, clearing away dead branches, thinning young trees, and creating healthier forests. Many species, even the towering ponderosa pine, evolved to survive these periodic burns. Fire wasn't always the enemy. In fact, for thousands of years, it was part of the solution. Indigenous people throughout the region also practiced cultural burning, intentionally setting low-intensity fires to encourage healthy plant growth, improve wildlife habitat, and reduce dangerous fuel buildup, which is why when I was saying, like, about logging, like, you got to get rid of stuff.
Absolutely. I mean, that's one thing. Having, you know, spent some time with your father, that I've learned, that's like, the loggers aren't the bad guys. The loggers know more than the tree huggers. The loggers spend every day in the forest, and they care about the forest more than the tree huggers. And I guarantee you, they've planted more trees.
They do. Yep.
And they understand how it works. And they don't want the forest to go away. That's their livelihood. They're really protecting the forest more than, you know, some of these activists who don't truly...
Well, you get someone like, I think it was, I mean, she's just one of them. I think Daryl Hannah or whatever, who they like camp out in the whatever. My dad encountered tree huggers that chain themselves to trees. They put spikes in the tree so that it could have killed my dad or anyone falling a tree. The saw would kick back and get you. They also would lay on the logging roads on the ground. Sorry, I'm getting political because it does make me very mad.
It's frustrating. They're just as dangerous, you know. And I get it. There's definitely
trees. Beat it, nerds.
There's definitely some massive, ancient, monumental trees that, like, man, I wish those didn't get cut down.
Sure, but how about get a job?
But how about get a job?
Like, what do you... You're just in the woods, like, trying to harm people and, like, annoying stuff? Like, you're an idiot.
Yeah, for sure. I would say, you know, overall percentage, I'm going to say 90% of loggers probably know more and care more about the forest than 90% of the tree hugger.
They wake up at 3 a.m. to go to work and spend the time with the trees and like and risk their life. It's the most dangerous job in the world.
Well, one of. It's up there, top three.
No, it is the number one.
I thought the crab fishing was worse.
No, I think that it's worse because I don't like water like that. That scares me.
Point is, at some point when you get into the top three of most dangerous jobs, it's kind of hard to tell what's the most dangerous. Yeah. It's risky. Yeah, it's risky business. Risky.
But they do care about it. They work their asses off. I mean, it's, and they're doing it to whatever. I'm getting upset now. Let's continue with the story.
But it's a very good point as we get back in that cutting down trees, you know, creating fire lines, clear cutting certain areas is very healthy.
Yeah, it allows the forest to breathe.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they renew themselves, just like any plant.
Yeah.
But over the course of the 20th century, that relationship changed. After several catastrophic fires in the early 1900s, federal policy shifted dramatically. The prevailing belief became simple. Every fire should be extinguished as quickly as possible. It seemed logical to protect homes, protect timber, protect communities. And for decades, firefighters became remarkably good at doing exactly that. Yet every fire they stopped left something behind. Dead branches, fallen logs, dense undergrowth, small trees crowding beneath mature ones. Year after year, decade after decade, the forest quietly accumulated fuel. It was as if someone had been stacking firewood across millions of acres. No one noticed until conditions became perfect. Then there was a drought. By 2021, Southern Oregon had entered one of the driest periods in generations. Winter snowpack had become disappointingly low. Spring rains arrived sparsely. Reservoirs shrank. Creeks slowed. Marshes that normally shimmered with water began to dry. Scientists monitoring vegetation noticed something alarming. Trees weren't simply dry, they were stressed. Months of drought had weakened them from the inside out. Needles contained less moisture. Dead limbs remained suspended in the canopy. Shrubs crackled underfoot. Even living trees were becoming fuel. Adding to the danger was an expanding infestation of bark beetles. These tiny insects had flourished during the warmer winters, killing vast numbers of trees along the Pacific Northwest. Is that what creates all the dead trees around here?
Yeah. Pine beetles. I mean, it's...
Because that is just lighter fluid right there.
It's kind of a massacre, and it's kind of really upsetting. Because the trees they're killing, some of them are hundreds of years old.
But we have...
And those are the only trees we got out here.
But right over, like, where our ceremony site is, the massive amount of dead trees right there, that's what you told me it was from the beetles, right?
Yeah, and that's all happened since I bought this property. Yeah, I don't know what to do. I think...
But if so let's say that fire that was only, like, 4 miles from us or whatever, let's say it would have actually gotten close to our property. We have them even around our house, those would have ignited. It's basically firewood.
It's 100% firewood. We burn it all winter. We've got no short supply of that. But yeah, I mean, if it could have easily caught on fire, and that would have sucked real bad.
Yep. Well, I think it's contained now-ish. I think that one's mostly contained. But day after day, temperatures climbed in the upper 90s and beyond. Humidity plummeted. Meteorologists issued warning after warning. Fire officials spoke openly about critical fire weather. Many later said the landscape had become a tinderbox. But even that phrase doesn't quite capture what firefighters saw. Some described vegetation so dry that leaves crumbled into dust in their hands. Others said fallen pine cones burst apart when stepped on. The forest wasn't just ready to burn, it was waiting to burn. So July 6th, 2021. Sometimes a beginning is obvious with a disaster. You can kind of see it coming. Clearly the firefighters were seeing and the forestry people were seeing something coming. But on July 6th, thunderstorms moved across portions of southern Oregon. Lightning crackled across the sky, striking the already parched landscape. And this lightning caused fires that are common through the American West. Many are discovered quickly, Some extinguish themselves. Others grow slowly enough that firefighters can contain them before they become major incidents. But this would be different. The first reports came from an area northeast of the town of Beatty, near the western edge of the Sprague River Valley. The fire had ignited in extremely remote terrain. Access was very difficult. It was hot as hell. Humidity critically low, and strong winds fanned the flames. Within hours, firefighters recognized that the fire was moving faster than expected. Aircraft were dispatched. They arrived, but hand crews started to begin cutting fire line. Bulldozers worked wherever the terrain allowed. But every hour, the fire continued to grow. Every acre it consumed, it gave more energy, more heat, more momentum. By the end of the first operational periods, incident commanders faced an unsettling realization. They weren't chasing a routine wildfire. They were confronting something that had the potential to become historic. So this fire became historic. But the firefighters were trying to mitigate it. And you, the other day, when we thought that the fire was going to attack us, basically, you talked about cutting in fire lines. Can you explain what that is?
I mean, to my knowledge, I can't explain exactly how they're formed or how, you know, what a good fire line is, but it's, you know, just what it says. It's a line that, you know, you basically remove the fuel. You cut out the trees, you dig a ditch so the dry grass can't keep spreading and the shrubbery. And, you know, you make a big enough gap between fuel, you know, the trees, that they can't, the fire can't jump. So you can kind of think of it like a highway cutting through a forest, right? Like the fire should stop right there. There's no more fuel to burn. And quite literally, you know, they take bulldozers and they push everything out of the way and they chainsaw and cut down trees and they literally dig with shovels. And that's, you know,
the amount of effort these firefighters have to do. Like, this is, thank you for your service, firefighters.
Like our buddy Matthew Hahn, you know, who was a prisoner and fought fires.
One of the best episodes we've ever done.
That's what those prisoner, what are they, fire camp? You know, what they send those prisoners out to do, I mean, they are 100% risking their lives. Like, they put them in the most dangerous situations where, like, there's the fire is coming and they're literally digging a fire line. Jeez. I mean, they're literally digging a ditch to stop the spread of the fire. It's like, think about it like a moat around a castle.
Yeah. Oh,
right?
Okay.
You know, you're not filling it with water, but you're taking away the fuel to hopefully stop the fire. You're basically making a giant ditch and a big gap of fuel to stop the fire from growing.
I don't know why that image just gives me severe anxiety. Like, it's just, but I feel bad and grateful that, you know, we have people that do that. And maybe it's also not kind to put inmates to do that.
I think the inmates would much prefer to be out in the wilderness.
Yeah.
And also, I think
in a cell block,
like, they get paid, granted, a very small amount. But I think it also, in a lot of cases, reduces their sentence.
Yeah.
You know, from my recollection, Matthew Hahn was like very proud and
yeah,
happy
he was
about mm-hmm. his time at the fire camp.
Yeah. He was very
and
proud.
If he, I, heck,
you should
know,
go back and listen to that episode of Seven Deadly Sinners listeners. It's
a Be Here for a While episode.
Oh, it was on Be Here for a While?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. It's, no, we re-released it on here, I'm pretty sure. But it's an incredible episode. Well, it's two parts. But Anyways, back to the story. So residents across Klamath County watched columns of smoke climb higher into the sky. At first, many assumed it would be another fire season inconvenience. Smoke was unfortunately part of summer life. But this column did not stop growing. It widened. It darkened. It spread across the horizon. Some ranchers later recalled stepping outside and feeling the wind suddenly shift, carrying with it the unmistakable smell of burning pine. Others noticed ash drifting down despite flames being miles away. The fire had announced itself, and it wasn't going anywhere. There comes a point in some disasters when people stop asking, can we stop it, and begin asking a much different question. How do we survive it?
Ooh, yeah. I mean, when you feel helpless against Mother Nature, you start to beg for mercy. And that's what I was feeling as, you know, driving up and down I-25 from Pueblo and back, looking at that, just like,
terrifying.
Like, there's nothing humans can do. Like, you just gotta pray and plan and evacuate and pray.
Yeah.
And it's...
Because I don't even know, like, you could have thousands of firefighters trying to... It's just not working.
I mean, it's... I've seen...
Like, how much water do you dump on it?
When it's that hot, I don't think there's not enough water in a jumbo jet to do much. You know, some of these fires, some of these videos I've seen of these infernos up in Aspen Acres, I mean, it is hellish. It looks worse than like CGI from a Hollywood blockbuster. It's just unbelievable. I mean, it literally looks like hell is erupting on Earth and consuming it. It's just fire everywhere. I mean, you know, taller than the trees, all the way to the ground, as far as you can see, and it's terrifying.
It takes up the entire sky. When we came back from Pueblo, remember that one? So when we were driving towards Pueblo, there was the one that you could see the blue sky behind it, whatever. On our way back, that one that I think seemingly erupted during our time, you know, at Home Depot or whatever, that one was just massive and terrifying looking. Terrifying.
Yeah, the smoke cloud, the plume that goes pretty much all the way up to space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So basically, we've just described like how terrifying fires can be, and let's just end it soon. Veteran firefighters often say every wildfire has a personality. Some creep, some sprint, some smolder quietly for weeks. The Bootleg fire seemed almost alive. Its enormous heat created powerful columns of rising air. As that air rushed upwards, cooler air raced in to replace it. And those winds fed the flames even more. The cycle repeated. Hotter, faster, bigger. Incident commanders began observing behavior that was difficult to predict. Entire stands of trees ignited almost simultaneously. That is so scary. Burning embers rode turbulent winds far ahead of the main fire front, starting new spot fires well beyond containment lines. One firefighter later described it as trying to stop dozens of wildfires at the same time. Crews would finish constructing a fire line only to discover another fire burning behind them. Imagine trying to build a fence around a moving target while the target keeps splitting into 10 more.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. That's exactly, you know, try to build a fence around it. That's what you're doing with the fire line. And then suddenly it's like, it's behind us. They got to be so discouraging.
Yeah. That is a horror movie. A horror movie. So as the sky begins to change Then these towering formations known as pyrocumulus. How do I say that word?
Let me give it a whirl. Pyrocumulus. Yeah, you were right.
Okay.
Pyrocumulonimbus clouds. So a cumulonimbus cloud is like a typical storm cloud, but a pyrocumulonimbus cloud develops when intense heat forces smoke, ash, moisture, and superheated air high into the atmosphere.
Terrifying.
The Bootleg Fire became so intense that it generated several of these massive cloud systems. From satellite imagery, they looked astonishing. From the ground, they were terrifying. The sky churned with boiling columns of smoke. Ash swirled like a blizzard. Sunlight turned an eerie orange. I know that orange.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that's like always the kind of the scariest thing is when the, yeah, these, now I know the name, pyrocumulonimbus clouds blot out the sun and then it's, yeah, it turns it's just, everything this burnt orange.
Yeah.
It's like, ooh.
You think everything's
it's on fire. The apocalypse.
Yeah.
So some afternoons suddenly became dark, so dark that residents switched on headlights in the middle of the day. And then came another astonishing phenomenon. Lightning. Not from a passing storm. Lightning born from the fire itself.
So scary.
Within those towering smoke clouds, ice crystals and ash particles collided, creating electrical charges much like a thunderstorm. The result was flashes of lightning that could ignite entirely new fires miles away. The Bootleg Fire had become both the wildfire and the weather. Fire whirls, as if towering fire generated thunderstorms weren't enough, firefighters witnessed another rare and dangerous phenomena. Fire whirls. Some casually call them fire tornadoes, but these rotating columns form when intense heat combines with unstable winds. Most are relatively small, and some only last seconds. Others, though, can tear through a landscape with frightening force. On the Bootleg Fire, several fire whirls were observed as flames raced through heavy timber. They tossed burning branches into the air. That's crazy.
It's
thinking of a fire tornado, not only is it throwing debris, but now it's on fire.
It's terrifying. I mean, and we have them right now.
This seems like something that's just like made up, like Sharknado. Right? Fire tornado. Fire whirl sounds more like a circus ride.
Snakes on a plane?
Get on the fire whirl, you know. But yeah, snakes on a plane. This is just like, really? Really, God? Anyhow, so they toss burning branches into the air. They scatter embers far beyond the fire lines. Even firefighters with decades of experience admitted these conditions demanded constant vigilance. The safest decision one moment could become the wrong decision only minutes later.
But how many firefighters do you need in an area to even mitigate this stuff? Like that's...
I think
do
when
they
there's
get to sleep?
Fire tornadoes, you just...
Well, they were playing darts at the Spanish Peaks Bar and Grill.
Okay.
I think they gave up.
Well, I think that's really all you can do when you got fire tornadoes. It's kind of like...
What am I supposed to do?
You know, widen the... I don't know.
I mean, they're risking their lives to... Yeah, just let it burn. In the words of Shibuzi, let it burn.
To quote the great Shibuzi...
Well, I think we should probably wrap it up, but that was an intense fire. There's intense fires going on in Colorado right now and across the country, but apparently the Aspen fire is the worst, at least via my fire app.
It's the worst in the country right now, but they finally got some containment yesterday. We've had a couple little showers here and there. You know, there's a little bit more moisture in the air. The tide seems to be turning. Mm-hmm. And God bless the firefighters.
Yeah, seriously, thank you for your service.
God protect the firefighters.
Please do.
And God give us some good weather. Let up.
There we go. Thank you guys so much for listening. And if you're enjoying the show, please leave a 5-star rating and positive review on Apple Podcasts. It means more than you know. And I just appreciate you guys sticking around for all these years. And thank you. Love you. Bye.